This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour.
Hello, this is Joel Hilliker, managing editor of the Philadelphia Trumpet News Magazine. This is our first program of 2017, and we are going to look into the future. What kind of year is 2017 going to be? What might these coming 12 months bring? I have a panel of trumpet writers here with our forecasting and predicting and prognosticating caps on. We're ready to discuss some things that we know will happen, or at least they're scheduled to happen this coming year, some things that will probably happen, and even some things that might happen. Here in the studio, we have Jeremiah Jacques.
Really good to be with you.
And from our office in the UK, we've got Richard Palmer.
Good afternoon.
And Sam Livingston.
Glad to be here.
From our office in Jerusalem, we have Brent Noctegal.
Thanks for having me.
Niels Bohr, a Nobel laureate in physics, said this: prediction is very difficult, especially if it's about the future. Forecasting always involves a bit of risk, but being the brave souls that we are, we're going to march forward and embrace that risk, hopefully some calculated risk. It isn't all that unusual for us at the Trumpet. We're always trying to evaluate the trajectory of current trends and to point our readers and our listeners ahead to where these are leading us. Proverbs 22 and verse 3 says, "A prudent man foresees the danger and hides himself." He anticipates trouble and disaster, and he adjusts his course in order to avoid it if he can. He's ready for it. But that verse concludes, "The simple go on and suffer for it." And that's the way that we naturally tend to be. We don't exercise enough foresight to consider the outcome of current trends, and we're just caught up in the moment. We fail to look down the road and recognize a looming threat, or we want to just put it out of our mind for one reason or another. But on this program today, we're going to look ahead and foresee the danger. That's essentially what this is about. This is our 2017 in preview. I want to start by talking about some of the things that we safely can say we know. This year, there are going to be some big leadership changes, and probably the biggest will be in the American presidency. Donald Trump is scheduled to take office in just a couple of weeks. I want to start by just talking about what we might see this coming year because of this transition of power. So I'm going to give Sam the first crack at what we might see in 2017 because of this change.
Thank you, Mr. Hilliker. Obviously, I believe the big question of this year is, what does a Donald Trump presidency look like? All through the campaign, he's been painted by the media. Just very broad strokes. He's racist. He's a bigot. And we haven't heard a lot about what this man is like. What can we expect? I think the one thing that is for certain is that he is unpredictable. And that is a frightening position to be in, especially if he is now that we know he's the incoming president of the United States. Yesterday, we were talking a little bit about it in the Trumpet meeting, and Mr. Morley mentioned just reading through a couple chapters of his book, The Art of the Deal. So I wanted to go ahead and just have a look at that and see, well, where is this man coming from? What is his background? It was pretty fascinating and pretty eye-opening, and there's a lot more to this man than just painting him with those broad strokes that we see the media doing. In one of his chapters, he's talking about, you know, the process that he goes through when it comes to trying to get a hotel and a business up and running. And he talks about, you know, getting a lot of the middlemen out of the way, trying to streamline the process. He's got a couple quotes in there where he talks about how he is the one who's in control. He doesn't like to have to work through all of these other intermediaries. He says, if the people below me have questions, they can come right to me. They can come right to the top. And he really proved to be successful in a lot of his business ventures. And it was interesting reading about the way he runs those things. But what I kind of concluded after reading this one chapter was that he is the one that likes to be running the show. He likes to be in control. When it comes to cooperating with other businesses or, you know, a partnership in that sense. He doesn't like that. He wants to be the one calling the shots. And in some sense, you can see how that works in the business world. But is that sort of mindset coming into the presidency when you do have to answer to the people who voted to you, when you have to answer to Congress, is that same sort of big business mindset going to work in the White House? And I think he does have, there is more depth to this man than what we see. But again, that big question is, will that work in the White House? Is that something that in the long run will work out? And what does that ultimately mean for the world? So this is, I think, the big question of 2017 is what a Trump presidency looks like.
Yeah, well, let's try to get to some answers, at least to make some forecasts about this. We could talk about how this might affect events within the United States, but let me just open it up to the rest of you. I imagine that this will be a factor in a lot of what we discuss over the program. What do you think will be some of the most immediate effects that President Trump might have on the course of events in the rest of the world? Any takers among our other men? Brent?
I think it'll be really interesting once he becomes into power. The first couple of months, they'll set the stage for his entire presidency. It'll certainly set the stage to see how adversarial nations to the United States go forward. How are they going to act? I suspect the first couple of months of his presidency to be ones in which we see foreign powers take a step back and analyze how he's going to act. I think we'll see some timidity from other world leaders in their actions. I don't think we're going to see some bold moves by, if we're talking the Middle East, I think Iran might actually try not to be as belligerent as it has been for at least a month or two, just to see how, to scope out how this president's going to act. We know that the event that really pushed Russia and Iran into the Middle East more, or to be more proactive in their foreign policy in the Middle East, was the United States leaving the Middle East, and especially that the breaking of the red line in Syria. That was like a moment at which we saw Russia's calculus change as far as what it could do in the Middle East, all resting on that one decision by President Obama not to follow his word and back up his word of military action. I think you bring a new president to the scene and they're all going to be at that point once again. Will this American president act on what he says? Will he get involved in my region? And they do respect American power still under a different leader. If we're talking about Russia, if we're talking about Iran, they will respect American power until they see him not use it or decide to, you know, achieve different goals than what they expect.
So, yeah, Brent predicting a little bit of nations taking a step back and trying to assess the situation. I'm looking at, say, what China has been doing in just the time since the election and thinking, well, is this really a nation that looks like it's kind of going to step back, or is it one that's going to try to press its advantage and jockey for position during these opening months?
Yeah, I think we really could see the latter with China. During the U.S. presidential race, Mr. Trump issued a whole series of threats to basically label China as a currency manipulator, to slap a wide range of tariffs on pretty much everything China sells in the American markets. I think the first part of that, labeling China as a currency manipulator, is not likely to happen. But the second part could happen to some degree, at least. We could see tariffs imposed. We could see anti-dumping restrictions placed on things like steel from China. And something like that would have all kinds of effects on the U.S.-China trade relationship, and it could even spill into other aspects of U.S.-China relations. It could really intensify the already heated situation that we see there in the South China Sea. It could, especially regarding the status of Taiwan and America's relationship with Taiwan, we could see, I think 2017 could really be a game-changing year in regard to Taiwan.
Yeah, you talk about the relationship between the United States and China, and in a sense, you're talking about a whole series of relationships that are connected to that. We've talked a lot about how the Philippines, you mentioned Taiwan, Japan, other nations within the region that have really been closely allied with the United States are very much, they're having to base their decision-making going forward on what happens in the United States. And it looks like to this point that things are definitely tipping into the in China's favor, and it doesn't look like we haven't seen anything from from Donald Trump that suggests that they have any reason to do otherwise.
Yeah, if anything, his promises to sort of bring an end to the era when America policed the world, mm-hmm. and to, you know, make these smaller nations pay for more of the security assurances that America has long provided for them, if anything, those sorts of promises will prompt more and more of these nations to say, we need to realign, we need to acknowledge the shifting tides happening here in the South Pacific and elsewhere, and maybe start to be a little more friendly to China, since we're not sure that we have a big brother to count on to help us stand up against China.
I'm sure that we will get into it a little bit, or it'd be easy to save this for later. But while we're on the subject, you look at the amount of discussion that has happened in Asian nations with regard to nuclear armaments and the desire to build or to expand nuclear armaments. I just wonder how much of that might be a factor and how much a Trump presidency might accelerate that discussion.
Well, I think that could be a really big one. You know, one theme of Mr. Trump's campaign was, as I mentioned, just that America needs to greatly scale back its defense of our allies. He said these nations that we've been protecting for so long need to start to pay for their share of it. They need to pay more, or else we're going to get out of there. And so he said, let Japan and South Korea, and I think he's mentioned some Middle Eastern countries as well, like Saudi Arabia, let them start to boost their own militaries, their own military capability. And the Japanese leadership would have been really nervous about these kinds of statements. Japan is currently locked in a pretty heated territorial dispute with China over the Senkaku Islands there. And they've seen China really become aggressive in making all kinds of incursions into their waters, mm-hmm. around that area. In recent years, Japan has already been sort of quietly remilitarizing and laying the groundwork for a return to full-fledged military power. But in light of Trump's statements, I think that in 2017, we could see Japan's efforts to remilitarize accelerate and intensify pretty significantly. That way, Japan can be ready to defend itself, even if America were out of the picture.
Well, let me bring Richard into this. Europe, looking at how Europe might change, what do you think your region might look like because of a Trump presidency, Richard?
I think it could be huge. There's still a lot of unknowns. And I think, like Brent, there will probably be, like he said, a kind of a holding of the breath once Donald Trump gets inaugurated. I think there's still a lot of uncertainty as to how much he's going to follow through with his statements on NATO. Is he going to be just kind of like Mr. Obama, where he makes a lot of requests for Europe to spend more on its military, but not much more on that? Or is it going to be something much more dramatic and, say, a United States that says we're going to end NATO unless you guys are spending X amount on your military by such and such a date? So that, I think, is going to be the biggest question in everybody's mind. There's a NATO summit scheduled for Brussels for May, June next year. So certainly in the run-up to that, we'd expect some clarity and we'd start to get a picture of, you know, is Donald Trump going to skip the NATO summit, or is he going to try and use that to make some kind of dramatic announcement? So that's going to be one of the big things to watch, and just how seriously Donald Trump takes NATO. And if he starts stepping that back, you are going to see more talk about a European military. You're going to see more of these Eastern European nations look directly to Germany and to a lesser extent France, but it's Germany that's been the main one that's been stepping up and really kind of taking the lead in helping out these Eastern European countries and being willing to work bilaterally on military missions. You'll see just an increase in that. The other thing I think here to watch for with Donald Trump that everyone's going to be holding their breath on is Ukraine and Russia. Again, what does Donald Trump's Russia policy actually look like? How does a put America first policy kind of line up with some of the pro-Putin comments that Donald Trump has made in the presidency? And I think there's still a lot of uncertainty here. Now, it does seem quite likely, based on his previous comments, the big if being if Donald Trump sticks to his word, that you would see some kind of dente with Russia, perhaps even a formal recognition of Russia's takeover of Crimea, or at least, if not a formal recognition, an ending of the sanctions and a wind down of America's opposition there. And if that happens, I think that's is going to be prophetically huge, whatever Europe does. At this point, Germany really is presented with two options. They've taken the lead so far in kind of rallying Europe behind America's sanctions. If America ends those sanctions, then Germany's just got to step up that leadership so much more if they're going to keep those sanctions there. And that would really be it would force Germany to take on a much more high-profile role and probably require even some bullying of other nations into submission there. Alternatively, if they decide to follow America's lead into coming to an agreement with Russia and winding down those sanctions, well, again, there's a whole load of prophetically interesting points that that intersect where Europe and Russia's interests kind of overlap, and they've got just occur in the same places. So if you do have a discussion with Russia over Ukraine, Syria is going to be part of that discussion. And we've been saying a long time that Syria is going to eventually end up in this kind of Arabic camp that's aligned with Europe. And so you could start, and then it also intersects with the Euro crisis, with Greece, with a whole load of other areas. We've been watching for some kind of potential deal between Europe and Russia. So whatever happens with Donald Trump's Russia policy, if he starts drawing closer to Russia, that's got major implications for Europe. And then I think the final big area to watch would be Donald Trump in the Middle East and North Africa. He's talked about taking care of Islamic State, but apart from that, he wants America to generally withdraw from the region. He's talked about trying to just get out of Afghanistan. We've seen Germany has been actually sticking around and maintaining their troop levels in Afghanistan, even while nations like Britain get out of there. So that will be something interesting to watch. And then North Africa. America does a lot in North Africa that doesn't really make the headlines. And if they start pulling that back, as would be very probable under Donald Trump, again, you've got this big vacuum left that Europe's got to start making some tough decisions about spending more military, about working together, about putting more boots on the ground. And so you could really see a withdrawal under Donald Trump forcing Europe to step up in just about all of its neighborhood.
No, the thought occurs to me, it's been famously said that America might not be interested in the Middle East, but the Middle East is very interested in America. And as much as, say, an American president might say it's time for us to pull out, really, Barack Obama found himself in a similar situation. He was talking about resetting relations with Middle Eastern nations and trying to draw down America's footprint there. And yet, it hasn't happened to nearly the degree that Barack Obama promised. And it seems like as bold as Donald Trump has been in talking about America withdrawing, how much will events sort of keep America in the discussion for the time being? You could definitely see there being dramatic changes if he did break from all precedent and just say, I don't care what the ramifications are, we're pulling out, we're drawing down, we're pulling America's influence back from some of these areas. Because there are so many of these hotspots around the world where America's presence or absence is a huge difference maker. So that really will be interesting to watch, Richard.
That's true. But look what has happened under Mr. Obama. I don't think he's gotten out of the Middle East and North Africa the way that he wanted to. But you've still got people regularly talking about there being a vacuum, about America not being interested in those regions. And so I think there's a huge difference between we're involved, we want to be involved, and we're watching closely what's going on here, and we're involved because we have to, and we're looking to get out when we can. Even if they don't succeed in withdrawing everybody, just that lack of interest, that lack of attention and focus, and just that looking for any excuse to leave rather than looking for where they can get involved and fix things, that absence of America is enough to force Europe to get much more involved. Because as we've seen with the migrant crisis and with this growing wave of terrorism in Europe, it's really Europe that gets hit quite directly by what goes on in that region, more so than America has been, at least in the last few years.
Well, you're listening to Trumpet Hour 101.3 KPCG. We're taking a preview of 2017. We've been talking about how Donald Trump taking power in America could change events around the world. That isn't the only leadership change we'll see this year. There are going to be elections in several countries. Some of them could lead to some pretty significant changes. I really want to talk about Europe, and we'll talk more about that in the second segment. There are some major elections over there. But first, I want to give our other two men a chance to weigh in. In the Middle East, we're going to have elections in Iran and Lebanon. Any thoughts about that, Brent?
Yeah, just with the Iranian election, there has been quite a lot of talk. This obviously isn't for the supreme leader. He is not elected by the general populace. He stays in power. So whoever you have fulfilling the presidential office, it needs to be seen in that light, in that the Islamist revolution isn't changing. The presidential candidates have all been vetted by the Supreme Guardian Council and the supreme leader. So whoever gets in power, Iran will continue its course, but it would be a question of how fast is Iran going to continue its march across the Middle East. They've done what they've done in the past, 4 years under Rouhani, who was meant to be a moderate, and he is more moderate compared to some of the hardliners. So he is coming up for re-election. Generally in Iran, they're 4 year terms, I believe, and the incumbent does get re-elected. Yet there has been a lot of talk about Rouhani not being re-elected because of the supreme leader's desire for a hardliner in power. Now, if he isn't re-elected, it will definitely be a hardliner that comes into power, because that's the way it has gone in Iranian elections for the past, two decades. There's a moderate, then there's a hardliner, there's a moderate, and then there's a hardliner. So it's in June, I believe, the election over there. So we'll see if Rouhani gets back in power. Either way, Iran's not stopping what it's doing. It'll be whether it will be able to pick up the pace, not having the moderating power of a so-called moderate in the presidential office.
In Asia, South Korea and India will both have presidential elections, along with Singapore and some of the stands, a few other countries in there. Jeremiah, any thoughts on what that might change in the region?
Well, my eye has been mostly on South Korea. We mentioned Japan before, and the way that America's sort of threats to retreat are prompting a rise in militarism there. And the same thing is happening in South Korea. Mr. Trump has said the U.S. shouldn't be paying to keep South Korea secure. And South Korea is well aware that if the U.S. pulled out or even reduced its influence drastically, then South Korea would face threats from nuclear North Korea, from nuclear China. So the South Korean people know that if America did retreat, as Trump has sort of threatened to do, then they would have to secure their own nuclear weapons. And reports from last year show that already some parliament members there are suggesting that they forge ahead with a nuclear program. And this all coincides with the impeachment of President Park for a scandal that she was caught up in. So populism has been rising among South Koreans. They're worried about the possible retreat of America. And then President Park's ouster could really open the door for South Korea to get kind of a strongman-style leader. Right now, the polls show a hardliner doing very well, and we've seen a rise in strongmen throughout Asia. We've seen, Xi there in China, Abe in Japan, Duterte in the Philippines, Putin in Russia, and so on. And so adding one more would just make the already volatile region just that much more volatile, and I think that could well happen in 2017.
Okay, well, let's go back to Europe. Four out of the six founding members of the European Project are going to have elections this year. Richard, how much might this change things?
That's a good question. To me, the biggest thing about these elections is not what they're going to change, but what they're a symptom of. They're a symptom of just a turning back on democracy. These parties that are way beyond the norms of just European democracy, of the way things are normally done, are doing very well. Perhaps turning the back on democracy isn't the best way of putting it. Like we've talked about in the latest trumpet, turning the back on liberal democracy, just the way Europe has been run since the Second World War, is being questioned not by 2-3% of the population in these core European nations, but 20-40% of the population. So I think that is it's going to be huge. And regardless of who wins these elections, that is going to have a huge impact this year, next year, just going on. And then the second way that they're really, again, a symptom of some much a deeper problem that's really going to be big for Europe, is that these upstart parties tend to be Eurosceptic. Mm-hmm. They want out of the euro. And so, again, now you're starting to have 20-40% of the population in countries like France, the Netherlands, Italy is not a dead certainty for an election, but still very probable. So Italy, and then in Germany, not as high as the rest, but still way higher than we've ever seen in Germany's post-war history. Significant numbers turning their back on Europe. So that those things are certain, those deeper problems are there regardless of who wins these elections. Now, in terms of how much are these going to change things, that starts to get more into who is going to win these elections, which that's much harder to call. I think it looks
well,
like
in a sense, you're already starting to see some of the center parties and the more established parties having to make accommodations for exactly the kind of demographic shifts and popular shifts in popular opinion that we see within these countries.
Right. Absolutely. We see that in Germany with Angela Merkel banning the burqa, with the Cologne police. You know, last year on New Year's Day, the Cologne police were criticized for being too left wing, too politically correct, not wanting to report that there were migrants carrying out the attack. This year, they're being criticized for racial profiling, for singling out men of North African origin and not allowing them into key districts. So you've got real change there within a bureaucratic organization in just the span of 12 months. So you're right, the mainstream is having to shift. So we are seeing that, but I think there is still a certain amount that is going to depend on who wins, but it shows that there's just this big surge in anger at the established way of doing things, but then also anger at the European Union within the core of Europe. And this election is just one aspect of just this building crisis that it seems like it's going to be very hard for Europe to escape in 2017. And I think the country perhaps with the biggest potential to actually have these upstarts get in would be Italy. And if they don't get in, I think they're going to push the establishment to have the same kind of leadership. So it seems now very hard to avoid a confrontation, a head-on confrontation between Italy and Germany in 2017. Were people calling that, saying that was going to happen a few years earlier? It didn't. But that's starting to seem unavoidable. So that's one very tangible way that you could see these elections feeding into a direct kind of existential crisis for the euro and perhaps even just this battle between Italy and the southern European nations and Germany in the north kind of coming to a head and really deciding the future of Europe.
Well, I think that's an excellent little taste of what we might talk about in the second segment as we continue our discussion, anticipating what might happen during the current calendar year and our 2017 in preview program here on Trumpet Hour. And so we'll take a short break. We'll be back in a moment.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
We've been talking about the effects of some of the leadership changes and the elections that we're going to see in 2017. We're going to get into slightly more speculative territory next as we preview what might happen this coming year. There are always unpredictable black swan type events that dramatically change the world. We're going to start by going back to the Middle East, to Brent Nachtigall there in Jerusalem. What are some big events that we might see? Maybe you can look at some of the trends that we're going to be watching this coming year and how that region might change.
Right. So when we're referring to Israel, we're really watching for three main prophecies. The one of those being the decline of the relationship between the United States and Israel, something we've seen dramatically be fulfilled through the previous 8 years. We also look for Israel's relationship to grow closer with Germany specifically. The Bible does foretell that. And then we also look for an Arab uprising in East Jerusalem to the point where East Jerusalem is actually taken out of Israeli hands, and no longer does Israel maintain sovereignty over that patch of land. So if I'm looking at those three prophecies and I'm thinking the one that is going to be fulfilled the most, or it looks like that in 2017, I would have to say that the last one, just because of the most recent UN Security Council vote, which really has declared that to the international world that East Jerusalem no longer belongs to Israel, but that it is by right territory of the Palestinians. Now, how does that affect things on the ground? I don't think it'll affect things much as far as the international community doing something about it. Yes, they've had a vote on it, but what can they actually do to bring that UN vote around and have an effect on the ground? They might be able to sanction Israel for work inside the West Bank, but I think what we'll see actually in East Jerusalem is an armed uprising by the Palestinians themselves to take that half of Jerusalem that the world has declared to be theirs. Mm-hmm. If you go back to the Second Intifada, when that began, that came just after the failed peace talks between Ehud Barak and Yasser Arafat, with Bill Clinton mediating those at Camp David. As soon as those look, even though Jerusalem was on the table at that point and Arafat denied it or didn't agree to it, it was the very next week that the Second Intifada began. So we had this offering of half of Jerusalem to the Palestinians, closely followed by an armed uprising where they started to blow themselves up on Israeli buses. And while I don't like the thought of that, I think that's where we'll go here in Israel.
Now, that's really fascinating, considering just how much emphasis the Trumpet's editor-in-chief, Gerald Fleury, has put on the significance of that, the fulfillment of that particular prophecy, really being like a trigger to a whole series of events that it would be the first domino to fall that would start a sequence of events that would really culminate in world war. And so if we see that, and like you said, for us to have witnessed what we did with the United States allowing that resolution to pass at the United Nations, that could really, I mean, we really could be right on the cusp of seeing that fulfilled really at any time.
Yeah, for sure. And it, as you say, it is probably the most exciting prophecy that can be. It's not necessarily a trend. It's an event. It's an event that everybody can say it's happened now. Mm-hmm. And that does start the timeline and the countdown of biblical end time prophecies.
Well, I'd like to, before we leave your region, Brent, I'd just like to talk a little bit about Syria, because this is obviously an area that we've focused a lot of attention on, and even just trying to figure out what might happen next there. It hasn't gone the way that we've expected to this point in a lot of instances, and yet the general trend line has been at least, it's been very interesting to follow. Maybe you can just give us an idea of what we might see in the coming year there.
The reason it's been so hard to predict what happens in Syria is because the player that's fulfilling the biggest role now is Russia, and they are not mentioned in Bible prophecy, in end time prophecies, as having a role in Syria, but yet there they are. We can only see, Bible prophecy really tells us the end result of what would take place in Syria, and that is Europe getting more involved. So, I mean, that does separate us from every other forecaster out there this year. I don't think any of them are going to say that Germany and Europe are going to get more involved into the Syrian conflict. I think they might think that it's all being wound up. So we look at the situation with Germany going to get in there in the end and have to think about, well, what's Russia doing there right now? Or how is Russia's presence there going to make way for Europe to come into that area? Now, I think personally that what Russia's doing there and how it's going to aid prophecy is that it is reducing Iran's hold on Syria, having Russia there. I've read a number of pieces this week how even with these peace talks involving Turkey, Russia, and Iran, Iran is the biggest loser in all of these going forward. Iran's demands don't look like they're being met, and yet Russia is pushing for it to try and get an end to this war with Turkey. So I think looking forward to 2017, we're going to see Iran actually get pushed out of Syria by Russia, and maybe that event does help Europe get more involved there.
One alternative, I just thought I'd read a quick sentence from Stratfor, or Geopolitical Futures predictions for 2017. And they write, Turkey's efforts to greatly step up its involvement in Syria will be the hallmark of the Middle East in the coming year. And they talked about how they expect Turkey to dramatically increase their troop presence, especially in the north of the region, mostly to fight the Kurds, well, although they'll pretend it's to fight the Islamic State the way they've been doing in the past. And I definitely do agree with Brent. I think that's one plausible scenario, Europe getting more involved via Russia. But perhaps we could see a much greater Turkish involvement and perhaps some kind of Turkey-Russia deal. And then the same prophecies tell us that Turkey is going to be allied with Europe as well. Mm-hmm. And so then perhaps Turkey will kind of, it will be the one that kind of brings Syria into that European orbit.
Yeah, I definitely think you're right with that. When Turkey entered back in September or October this past year, that's what I, you know, we wrote an article, is this the end of Assad if Turkey's entering, because of Turkey being allied with the future Syrian regime? Whoever's in power in Turkey, in Syria in the future, we know Turkey will be with them. And I can see, as you say, Europe and Turkey are basically wed together for the future if the Middle East is going to be contained, or if the overflow of refugees and crises in the Middle East are going to be contained, Europe has to work with Turkey. So yeah, that could be a great way for them to get in the door there.
All right, well, let's go ahead and transition into some of the bigger factors that could really be influential in Europe's future this coming year. We talked about some of the elections, but Richard, you were talking about some of the trends that are driving changes politically within several European countries and giving a boost to popular support for a lot of unorthodox views in a lot of these countries. But we have seen some major pressure put on Europe over this past year. I was reading a Spectator article that said after the tumult of 2016, Europe could do with a year of calm. It won't get one. With all of these factors aligning, what might we expect to see this coming year?
So I think when we're sitting down in a year's time reviewing 2017, I think this could well be the number one thing on our agenda. Europe just looks like it's gearing up for a absolute crisis of a year. Now, you could well have said that about previous years. It's one of those things where it's just each year Europe somehow manages to just avoid a crisis. But each time they do that, the stakes just get higher and higher. Mm-hmm. So we've talked about the elections, just the mass anger across Europe's founding nations at the European Union. And then there's just that question, you know, how does Europe survive if huge percentages shifting, growing percentages as well, shifting towards majorities in these central European countries start turning against Europe? Then you add to that the euro crisis. So we know Italy's banks are in trouble. We know that's not been fixed. And we know that that is pushing a lot of resentment towards Europe as a whole and towards Germany in Italy. We know that Greece is heading up to some key deadlines in the summer with debt repayments. We know that Greece is struggling to come to an agreement with Europe. It's struggling to come to an agreement with the IMF. And then the elections just make this even more problematic. It's going to be even harder for Italian politicians to give in to German politicians because of the elections. It's going to be very hard for Angela Merkel to cut Greece or Italy any slack because of the elections. Just so then you just see this crisis building. And then even you could see 2017 being the year that the euro crisis hits Germany. This isn't something I think is necessarily going to happen, but something that is certainly possible, if not necessarily probable. You've got, firstly, Deutsche Bank, the big problems we've talked about there. And then secondly, Germany is export dependent. There are already signs this year that those exports are slowing, that that's starting to feed through to the German economy. Then if you get a protectionist Donald Trump that starts trying to cut back or at least not increase America's overall trade with the rest of the world, you start to get some stagnation in America, potentially with, say, the Black Swan event of an economic crash in America. And Stratfor talks about how that, of geopolitical futures, it talks about how that starts to become more probable in the latter half of 2017. And then beyond that, just about a virtual certainty. That has major implications for Germany. So you could start to see the wheels come off potentially even the German economy. So the euro crisis, another major potential crisis for Europe. And then you look at the terrorism that we've seen 2015, mm-hmm. 2016, just the numerous instances in 2016. It would be amazing, astonishing, if there weren't multiple instances of large terrorist attacks in Europe in 2017. And again, that filters through to the political crisis. It filters through to the anger at Europe, because so much of this now is to do with Europe's open borders, lack of ability for Europe to police its borders. Tied in with that, you have the migrant crisis. And I certainly agree with Brent, in the long term, we're going to have a close alignment between Europe and Turkey. Bible prophecy tells us that. In the short term, things aren't looking so good between Europe and Turkey, like we both spoke about a week ago. And so could that short-term problems in relations with Turkey feed through to a much larger outbreak of the migrant crisis in 2017? Certainly a possibility. Even if it doesn't, you're going to have very large levels of migrants coming into Europe, and that you're going to see just increasing the pressure on European leaders and the push towards the fringe right and these parties like the National Front within Europe. And then, as we also spoke about, the pressure is going to be on with NATO and just Europe's whole neighborhood looking less and less secure. So no wonder a lot of people are saying that the European Union could fall apart now.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it took a blow with Brexit. Well, what about Quitterly?
Right.
Frexit. How is Europe going to survive this next year? So we're going to see some major, major pressures on Europe. And so we'll see Europe being forced to just really confront a lot of these problems. And we're going to see just this growing desire now for strong leadership on the national level, for strong leadership in the European level, strong leadership wherever anybody can get it, really, in the face of just these mounting crises, any one of which could just boil over into an absolute, once in a decade normally type crisis.
I think you make a great point that it's easy to we've probably made similar types of statements about Europe in years past, and we say, well, this coming year could really be the big one. But when you see the way that all of these factors that you're describing here are all combining to increase the pressure, and the fact that it was put off for another year only increases the stakes of what we might see this coming year. It's a really fascinating situation because we really are on the cusp. You can see all of these things aligning in a way that could see the dramatic fulfillment of some of these prophecies that we've been talking about for decades. You alluded to the one there at the end, just how much Europeans and particularly Germans, as we've drawn attention to, would be inclined to just thrust someone to power who would be able to address some of these, earthquake magnitude, huge events that are all combining at the same time. That's something that we could easily see happen over this coming year.
Right. And just all of these prophecies, they just really, we're making some big calls for Europe based on Bible prophecy, founded on Bible prophecy. The strong leader is certainly one. And Europe of 10 nations, that's a big change to go from this 27 nations to have either a shrinking of the European Union or some kind of core group of 10 nations, even a European military. There have been big steps on that so far. But to give up control of your armed forces to some kind of multinational entity of which you're only a small part, that's a huge ask. And so there are a lot of people saying that that's never going to happen because that's just such a big deal. And then just even a complete change in attitude from Europe is basically what we're forecasting. If you're saying Europe, like we are, that Europe's going to get more militarily involved, that they're going to take the lead in confronting Iran, that's a big turnaround for this kind of liberal, metropolitan, sophisticated Europe that would prefer to leave all of the fighting to America. Mm-hmm. And we just want to kind of sit and just enjoy our coffees in the terrace and sip wine in the evening, and that's all that we're concerned about. So we are forecasting some huge changes for Europe, so it makes sense that it's going to take some huge crises to bring that about. And that's what Mr. Armstrong talked about for years, and he talked about the potential for an economic crisis and starting in America leading to some of these big changes. And I think we could certainly start to see those crises unfold, the crises that will be necessary for those prophetic developments that we've talked about for so long.
Let's just transition a little bit into how much those types of say, cataclysmic changes within Europe might affect Asia as well. Because this is, and we've talked a little bit before about just the relationship between Germany and Russia and how that might change based on, say, a Trump presidency and an alignment between the United States and Russia. Jeremiah, how much do you think all of these factors combining in Europe might actually have an effect on Russia and elsewhere in Asia?
Well, I think the political and economic strife that we see in Europe, alongside Mr. Trump's desire to improve the U.S. relationship with Russia, really means that in 2017, we could see Russia kind of crack those sanctions that have been levied against it ever since 2014, when Russia intervened in Ukraine and annexed the Crimean Peninsula there. Ever since that time, the U.S. and Europe have enacted and continuously extended some pretty heavy sanctions regimes against Russia. But as Richard mentioned, right now you've got several right-leaning leaders and various groups in Europe that are gaining power. In many of these cases, the leaders and groups are very Russo-friendly. In some cases, Russia is actually helping these groups to gain power with propaganda campaigns, with cyber attacks, with political maneuvering. And so this year, I believe we could see Russia intensify and broaden those kinds of campaigns and attacks. So if this trend continues, then some of those European powers might begin to end their support of the sanctions against Russia. And then, of course, Donald Trump has also made clear that he may try to have a much better relationship with Russia, which could entail lifting some of those sanctions. And then also this European strife and economic turmoil and political turmoil, that could prompt some of the former Soviet countries like Ukraine, Moldova, and Georgia to sort of reevaluate their relationship with Russia in a way that draws them closer to Moscow. This could result in increased trade, possibly even compromising over the status of their Russia-friendly breakaway provinces. Richard mentioned in the first half that could happen with Crimea there in Ukraine, but I think with Transdniestria in Moldova, with Abkhazia and South Ossetia there in Georgia, we could see a lot of those, you know, a lot of concessions made to Russia, because these nations that feel they've often felt torn between Russia and Europe, now they see Europe faltering so much, they feel that they need to realign themselves, they need to make concessions with Russia in a way that I just really think that a lot of this European discord and turmoil will translate into Russian power.
This is another area that feeds into the crises within Europe, and actually this Russian power could just add to the European discord, because how do you keep a union together where, for the eastern half, for Poland, Lithuania, a lot of these countries, the main reason to be in the European Union in the first place is for protection against Russia. Mm-hmm. How do you keep them together on the one hand with countries, say, that probably including France, Italy, and Western European nations that want to follow a Donald Trump America into a much closer relationship and working with Russia and Syria? It presents such a gulf that, again, that's another crisis Europe has to address, and just forces this need for a much more unified foreign policy of, well, how do you keep with those nations with such diametric opposite views on Russia together?
We have a whole lot to look at this coming year. We can be sure it's going to be an exciting year. We'll take one more short break. We'll come back with a lightning round of predictions for 2017. That's coming up next.
Trumpet Hour with Joel Hilliker.
We are going to finish with our lightning round of predictions for 2017, and we'll start with Sam.
Continue to watch America turn inward. I think Donald Trump is going to be very preoccupied with trying to undo a lot of Mr. Obama's legacy. It's just going to cripple him in terms of trying to do work outside of America, and then he's just going to be focused on doing that, which I think he's going to find to be a much harder task than he's made it out to be.
All right, we'll go to Richard.
Brexit is one of the big events from 2016, but of course it's easy to forget it hasn't actually happened yet. So 2017, we're going to start to see some of the actual nuts and bolts of what happens with Brexit. Britain is going to, I believe, scheduled for March, finally, given its notice that it's going to leave the European Union. And so we're going to start to see that to filter through, that to have an effect within the European Union, that to affect Britain's relationship with the European Union, the relationship with America, and just a whole load of questions as to how that's going to work will start to be answered.
All right, Jeremiah.
In the South China Sea, China has achieved many of its goals. So I think that in 2017, we can expect China to replace the strategy of aggressive expansion that we've seen over the last few years with a strategy that combines coercion with cooperation. China will try more and more to cooperate with countries like the Philippines and Malaysia, countries who claim areas that China also claims. But China will make conciliatory gestures to these nations on maritime issues, economic issues, things like that. And so I just think that we'll expect or we'll see more of a soft power push from China toward these countries that are amenable or at least potentially amenable.
All right, Brent.
So incoming President Trump, he's promised that he's going to get tougher with Iran, to the excitement of the Sunni Arab monarchies in Saudi Arabia and Bahrain. They would like to see that happen. But he's also said that they believe that they should be paying their fair share for their own security. So what's he going to do? Well, my prediction is that he decides to actually pull out of the Persian Gulf, takes out the Fifth Fleet, American presence no longer there. And with that, Iran is going to take control of that body of water.
Okay. I like these bold predictions. Let's see, Sam, what have you got?
It's not so bold. It's already been happening, but continue to watch for more unrest in America. Again, part of that Mr. Obama's legacy, protests in the cities and riots, racial tension. Donald Trump has made promises to try to reconcile those things and try to heal the nation, to make America great again, but that moral weakness within America is probably going to prove to make that impossible for him to do.
Such a downer, Sam. All right, over to Richard.
Sam just had a story that started in 2016. My item started in 1517. That was the year of the Protestant Reformation. This year we're going to have the 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation. They already celebrated the beginning of that 500th anniversary year. So it'll be interesting to see the push for unity between the Catholic Church and the Lutherans, the first breakaway group and of huge symbolic and practical importance within Europe. So coinciding with this anniversary year, we've been forecasting at the Trumpet and at the Plain Truth that the Catholic Church is going to play an increasingly prominent role in Europe and really to play a major role in solving all of these crises that Europe is being confronted with. So the Catholic Church will be very interesting to watch in this year, and a lot of that could revolve around that 500th anniversary of the Protestant Reformation and the push for unity between the Catholic Church and those Protestant daughters coming up now within the next year.
Yes, sir. Back to Jeremiah.
With Mr. Trump threatening to use Taiwan as a bargaining chip, we can expect China to increase pressure on Taiwan with diplomatic isolation, military intimidation, and targeted economic coercion. If Beijing starts to feel that none of that is sufficient, we could possibly even witness a major black swan moment in 2017, which would be an actual annexation of Taiwan. I don't think it would even have to be by a military invasion. It could instead be accomplished in a way that sort of parallels what we saw there with Russia and Crimea back in 2014. But even if it were accomplished in that kind of a fashion, it would be a massive game changer, sending reverberations all over the planet. And as Trumpet Editor-in-Chief Gerald Fleury has written before, if that does happen, it will be because of, quote, a pitifully weak-willed America.
All right, back over to Brent.
6 years ago, the president of Egypt, Mr. Mubarak, was forced out of office during the Arab Spring. Well, right now, the conditions that led to that ousting of him are actually worse inside Egypt. Political, social, economic problems in Egypt have swelled to levels that were not even existent before Mubarak came out of power. And also you see the fact that terrorist organizations are rising in Egypt through the Sinai Peninsula as well. So what I think is going to happen is Egypt is going to face another Arab Spring in 2017, which might see Mr. Sisi fall from power.
Hmm. All right. Well, we'll give you the last word, Sam.
Personally, I'm excited to see all of the people that Donald Trump is appointing to all of these positions. I'm predicting that there will be a temporary resurgence in the American superpower, that in principle, some of these guys do have an economic plan that might work. And for a few months, maybe America will be back. That's just me being a patriot and kind of getting excited about it. But again, in the end, we know that as smart as those men might be, it won't be able to solve America's problems, and we know what it will take to actually make America great again.
All right. Well, we're coming to the end of Trumpet Hour. All of your prognostications are on record, men. We have them. They're down. You can't run away from them now. You can feel free to send us your thoughts on the program by emailing letters@thetrumpet.com. I want to thank the panel today, Jeremiah Jacques, Sam Livingston, Richard Palmer, and Brent Noctegal.
Great to be here.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Yeah, great job, fellas. Thanks to our technical staff, Dwight Falk and Steve Herkus, the bearded one. I'll leave you with this thought from Charles F. Kettering. My interest is in the future because I am going to spend the rest of my life there. Thank you for joining us on Trumpet Hour. It's been a pleasure. Until next time, keep watching your world.
You've been listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio, 101.3 KPCG, and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.